take your Bibles and turn to Exodus chapter 14. We'll begin there this evening and looking and answering the question, why is salvation so hard? Tonight we're going to look at the delivery. This morning we talked about that we tried to make a parallel between the events in Egypt when God delivered his people out of human bondage and out of slavery. And we looked at their bondage. We looked at God promising to deliver them, sending Moses in to deliver them. And then we finished up this morning looking at the struggle for freedom. That God told Moses it would not be easy, but it would be difficult. Pharaoh would not roll over. He would be difficult, and he would make it difficult. And therefore, they needed to be patient, and they needed to trust God. But God kept his promise after he sent the 10 plagues. He did deliver them. And in Exodus chapter 12, it says the children of Israel journeyed from Ramesh to Sychar, about 600,000 men on foot. Besides children, a mixed multitude went up with them also, and flocks and herds, and a great deal of livestock. Now they sojourned of the children of Israel who lived in Egypt for 430 years. And it came to pass at the end of 430 years, on that very same day, it came to pass that all the armies of the Lord went out from the land of Egypt. And it was told to the king of Egypt that the people had fled. And the heart of Pharaoh and his servants turned against the people. And they said, why have we done this? Why have we let Israel go from serving us? Let us make ready, take our chariot, and they took his people with him. And he took 600 choice chariots, the chariots of Egypt, the captains over every one of them. And the Lord hardened the heart of Pharaoh, king of Egypt, and he pursued the children of Israel. And the children of Israel went out with boldness. So the Egyptians pursued them, and all the horses and the chariots of Pharaoh's horsemen and his army, and overtook them, camping by the sea of Perhathim, before Baal-Zephon. And when Pharaoh drew near, the children of Israel lifted up their eyes, and behold, the Egyptians marched after them, so that they were very afraid. And the children of Israel cried out to the Lord. And then they said to Moses, because there were no graves in Egypt, have you taken us to die in the wilderness? Why have you so dealt with us to bring us up out of Egypt? Is it not the word that we told you while we were in Egypt, saying, let us alone that we may serve the Egyptians? For it would have been better for us to serve the Egyptians than we should die in the wilderness. Now I want you to remember, before we continue reading, who cried for who? The Israelites were in severe bondage in Egypt. They were under severe persecution by the Egyptians. They had petitioned God, they had pleaded to God, that he would revive them, that he would remember the covenant that he had made with Abraham, and that he would deliver them out of their harsh bondage. They approached him. They cried to him. They asked for deliverance. God heard their cry. He sent Moses in. He told Moses it won't be easy. It's not going to be, I'm not going to send you in, and he's not going to let them go. He's going to fight. He's going to resist. But I'm going to show my power over him. And eventually he'll let you go, and you'll be able to head to the promised land, and you will be the nation and the free people that I promised Abraham. You're going to have to trust me. But now, when they look behind, I want you to think about something. What had they just saw in Egypt? What had these 600,000 men on foot and all the nation of Israel that traveled out of Egypt, what had they just experienced in Egypt? They saw the greatest nation on earth, the power in that time of biblical history, the power on the earth, and they saw it crumbled and destroyed by the hand of God. Through Moses, he brought the 10 plagues, and he destroyed the nation. You remember the wise men? They were ready to send them out very early. And they told Pharaoh, this is the finger of God. You need to let these people go and let them stop being a noose around their neck. But yet they saw all of that, And then when they were traveling, I don't know if you remember, that he led them by a cloud in the day, and he led them by a pillar of fire at night. And while the Egyptians were pursuing them, he put the pillar of fire behind them, where the Egyptians could not overtake them, where he kept a distance between them and the children of Israel. And yet, after all they saw, after all he had done for them, they want to go back to Egypt. They're willing to throw in the proverbial towel. They're willing to give up because it's too hard, because they fear the Egyptians will overtake them. Now, this problem begins a problem that finds the children of Israel through the rest of their existence as God's people. They have very weak faith. I call them here and now people. They forget very quickly what God does for them. And they forget very quickly the promises of God. And they forget very quickly how God had demonstrated his love for them in all that he had done for them. Now, remember, we're using this as a parallel for the struggle that we find ourselves in an ungodly world. And where we have struggles, and we have adversity, and we have tribulation, and the majority of the world doesn't appreciate God, many of them don't believe in God, many of them mock him, many of them ridicule him, and yet we have to live in this world, and we have to be distinct, we have to be different, and yet we have all these obstacles and snares, and this discouragement in front of us, and what can happen is what happened to them. We forget who we are, and we forget who God is. And we allow the moment to overtake us. We allow the temporary discomfort, the discouragement, the monkey wrench, the thing that we don't want to deal with, we allow that to sidetrack us and cause us to lose spiritual focus. And we begin to become discouraged. And even though we would not admit it, sometimes even a little bit of doubt can begin to creep in. How is God going to answer their doubt? Is he going to say, go back? Take the pillar of fire away and let the Egyptians overwhelm them. But he didn't do that. That's not what he did. Here's what he did do. He said, Moses said to the people, do not be afraid. Stand still and see the salvation of the Lord, which he will accomplish for you today. For the Egyptians whom you see today, you will see again no more forever. For the Lord will fight for you, and you shall hold your peace. Now notice, he told them to stand still. He told them to be quiet and watch the Lord do what he does. Watch the Lord deliver them, and the enemy that they fear, the enemy they see behind them, they will never see them again. They will never be an obstacle for them again. How's he going to do it? The Red Sea's in front of them. The Egyptians are behind them. It seems like an insurmountable obstacle, except they forget that it is God who is leading them. And in the next verse, the Bible says, then Moses stretched out his hand over the sea, and the Lord caused the sea to go back by a strong east wind all that night, and made the sea into dry land, and the waters were divided. So the children of Israel went into the midst of the sea on dry ground, and the waters were on them on their right hand and on their left. Then the Egyptians pursued them and went into the midst of the sea. All Pharaoh's horses, all the chariots, all the horsemen. Now I want you to think about this for a minute. What had they just experienced in Egypt? What had just happened to their nation? What happened? What about that last plague? What about the last plague where he killed every firstborn in Egypt? Everyone from Pharaoh to the lowest servant in his kingdom, every one of them lost one of their children. Have they forgotten about that? Have they forgotten about the plagues? Have they forgotten how God brought them out? Have they forgotten all the things that they personally witnessed and experienced as God destroyed the mightiest nation on earth? Have they forgotten that? Yeah, they forgot about that. But how could they forget it? Because they're blinded by their rage. They're blinded by their anger at the Israelites. Because now they're gone. Now they're not going to be able to have people to take their burden, to do their task. And so they're blinded by their hatred. And they don't remember. But God's about to wake them up. And Moses stretched out his hand over the sea. And when the morning appeared, the sea returned to its full depth. While the Egyptians were fleeing in terror, so the Lord overthrew the Egyptians in the midst of the sea, then the waters returned and covered the chariots, the horsemen, and all the army of Pharaoh that came in the sea after them. Not so much as one of them remained. Every chariot and every horseman that went into the water could not run fast enough as the water came back together. But the children of Israel had walked on dry land in the midst of the sea, and the waters were a wall for them on their right and on their left. So the Lord saved Israel that day from the hand of the Egyptians. And Israel saw the Egyptians dead on the seashore. Thus Israel saw the great work which the Lord had done in Egypt. So the people feared the Lord and believed the Lord and his servant Moses. Notice, so the children of Israel believed the Lord and feared the Lord and his servant Moses. How long does that last? How long does that fear and respect for God and for his servant Moses last? It doesn't really last 24 hours. After this great deliverance, if you read Exodus chapter 15, they sing a song while they're on the other side of the Red Sea. Now they are free people. They are the nation that God promised Abraham. They have multiplied while they were in captivity. They are a free nation. They sing a song to Moses. They sing a song to God, thanking him for the deliverance. And by the time we get to the next page of the next chapter, they're back to their old ways of complaining because they don't have water to drink. Now, you see, God delivered them. Their earthly struggles, they have been delivered from. Now, what is all this going to do for their commitment to God now? Now they're free, now they're a nation, now they're on their way to the promised land. They're on their way to Canaan. And it's going to take them about 3 months to get there. Now what about their commitment to God now? Take your Bible and turn to Exodus chapter 19. Let us look at what they promised to do. After what God had done, here's what they promised to do. In Exodus 19, verse 3, it says, "And Moses went up to God, and the Lord called to him from the mountain, saying, Thus shall you say to the house of Jacob, and tell the children of Israel, You have seen what I did to the Egyptians, and how I bore you on eagle wings, and brought you to myself. Now therefore, if you indeed obey my voice, keep my covenant, then you shall be a special treasure to me above all people. For all the earth is mine, and you shall be a kingdom of priests and a holy nation. These are the words which you shall speak to the children of Israel." Now, he tells them, "I will bless you. I will be with you. You will be a special nation. I will be your God. You will be my people. All you have to do is obey my voice and keep my covenant." Those are the only two things they have to do. Obey his voice and keep his covenant. Now that's what he's asked for all that he had done for them. What do they say? So Moses came, called for the elders of the people, and laid before them all the words which the Lord had commanded them. And all the people answered them together and said, "All that the Lord has spoken, we will do." So Moses brought back the words of the people to the Lord. "All that he has spoken, we will do." And the Lord said to Moses, "Behold, I come to you in a thick cloud, and the people may hear when I speak to you, and believe you forever." So Moses told the words to the people. So it came, and he told the people all the words of the Lord and all of the judgments, and the people answered with one voice and said, "All the words which we have heard the Lord say, we will do." Remember when they heard God's voice? Remember what they told Moses? "You talk to God. We don't want to hear his voice ever again. You talk to him, you tell us what he says, and we will obey him." So now they have pledged that they will obey his voice, they will keep his covenant, they will do all that he says, because now they know that he loves them, he cares for them, and he has demonstrated it by freeing them from bondage, freeing them from their dreaded enemies, the Israelites, and now he has kept promise number one, and he has made them a great nation. Now the rest of this story ought to be very happy, shouldn't it? Shouldn't the rest of this story be a glorious story of how they fulfilled what they promised to do? But you and I know that that's not how the story went. We know that's not what happened. And he took the book of the covenant and he read it to the hearing of the people. And they said, "And the Lord has said we will do, and we will be obedient." And Moses took the blood, sprinkled it on the people, and said, "This is the blood of the covenant which the Lord has made with you according to all of the word." And so you know what's happened? They now are in a binding covenant sealed with blood, and they have promised and committed themselves to do all that God asked without question. Now, that seems like the right thing to do, doesn't it? For all that God did for them, does that just not seem the right thing to do? Does that not seem to be the least they could do for all that God did for them? They cried to God. They wanted released from bondage. God answered their call. They wanted delivered. God answered their call. He wanted them to save them from the Egyptians when he pursued them. He answered that problem. And then he brought them through the Red Sea. He made them a free nation. He made them the greatest nation on earth at the time. And he promised to be with them and he would prosper them and no one would come up against them. And all they had to do is obey my voice and to keep my covenant and all will be well. And they promised on the other side of the Red Sea, they promised to do that. The rest of this story should be a grand story, but it's not, because they just gave God lip service. You see, God, what happened afterwards? I can't tell you everything that happens, but I will tell you a few things that happens. Do you remember the golden calf? Do you remember when Moses was up on the mountain receiving the law? And Joshua was down waiting for him, and he was up there 40 days and 40 nights. And then they come in Exodus chapter 32, and they come to Aaron, and they say, "Well, what happened to Moses? How long has Moses been gone?" And they know where Moses is at. He's on the top of the mountain. They were told not to go near the mountain. They were smoking. It was on fire. And they were told not to go by the mountain because Moses was up there talking with God. They knew where Moses was. They knew what Moses was doing. But this shows a pattern that follows this people. They come to him and said, "We don't know what happened to Moses. Make us gods to go before us." What was one of the things in the Ten Commandments that they were not to do? That they received in Exodus 20. They were not to bow down to any image. Above the earth, beneath the earth, they were not to practice idolatry. That was one of the basic fundamental points of the Ten Commandments. And they made this calf of gold. And they began to worship it. And they began to sing and pray. And God heard it from up on top of the mountain. And he told Moses, "You go down because this people have already turned their back against me." You remember Moses came down off the mountain? And do you remember that he met Joshua and they went into the camp? And Joshua said, "Look, the sound of victory is in the camp." Moses says, "That ain't victory. That's singing and dancing. That's merrymaking." And so he went, came off of the mountain with the two tablets of stone that he had received by God, that were written by the finger of God, and he saw the calf, and he saw the going on that were happening, and he took the two tablets, and he broke them in pieces. And then he confronted Aaron. "Aaron, what have you done? Why have you led this people into this great sin?" And you remember Aaron, "Hey, don't be mad at me. You know how these people are. You know how they're mischievous. You know how they're impatient. They came to me and they wanted to God to go before them because they didn't know what happened to you. And they brought me all their gold. And by the way, who asked them to bring all the gold?" You know, if you listen to Aaron, he thinks they just brought the gold. They just brought the gold, they threw it in the fire, and the scarf came out. That's not what happened. He asked them to bring your gold. He asked them to bring it to him. And he molded. If you go back and read Exodus 32, he molded the calf. Why did he make it a calf? Why did he make it a cow? Why did he make it a lamb? Why did he make it a lamb? Why make it a calf? Because that was things that were worshipped in Egypt. Do you remember what God's servant did to the calf? He took it and he grinded it up in pieces. And he threw it in the brook of Kidron. And then he made him drink it after he grounded it up. And then he asked a question. He said, "Who is on the Lord's side?" And the Levites came by his side, and they went through the calf, and they killed over 3,000 people. How long did their commitment last? Didn't last very long, did it? And you know what? This is a pattern that we've seen and we studied when we went through the history and geography of the Bible. Didn't we see this pattern played over and over and over again? How they would continually disobey God, forget his covenant, forget his promises, forget the law, be disobedient, go into idolatry. God would send one prophet after another and they would rebuff them. Isn't this a pattern that continues throughout their existence? But you know what? God is patient. In Exodus chapter 25, he begins to give the instruction for the tabernacle. He tells them about the furniture. He tells them about the ark. He tells them about the inner and outer court. The altar, the priesthood is established. The law is explained. The census is taken. And they count all the children of Israel that come up out of Egypt, and there's 6,300. There's 6,300, 6,003, and 350. Men and women who are over 20 years old, 603,350 in the first census. That's not counting women and children. Estimates tell us that when they came out of Israel, there were at least 2 million and maybe 3 million people that came up out of Egypt. The This is a vast people. And so they're given the law, they depart from Sinai, and for 28 days, they go into the wilderness. And where are they going? They're going to the promised land. Now, when the people complained, it displeased God. When intense cruelties increased their complaining, they complained about water, they complained about food. And every time they complained, God answered their complaint. How did he answer their complaint about food? He gave them manna. When they complained about water, what did he do? He satisfied their thirst by giving them rock, giving them bittersweet water out of the palms of Mara, or by taking the water out of the rock. When they didn't, got tired of the manna. They didn't like the manna. They got tired of it. They said it was loathsome. Then he sent them quail. And he sent it so much that they got sick of it. Every time they complained, he answered their complaint. Aaron and Miriam in Numbers chapter 12 speak against Moses, and they are punished. And then the rejection of the promise. Remember, he sent the spies in. They looked at the land. It was everything God said it was, wasn't it? Everything God told them that was in there, but they feared what they saw. And they didn't trust God. They didn't believe God. And they would not go in. So God punished them. God punished them, and how did he punish them? He caused them to wander 1 year for every day the spies were gone. And in that first 40 years, that generation of 603,000, 350, they died in the wilderness except two of them, Joshua and Caleb. Every other man that came out of Egypt over the age of 20 died in the wilderness because of unbelief. Now, why did God tell us this story? Why did God give us the details of what happened? Remember what we read this morning? Do you remember 1 Corinthians chapter 10? Moreover, brethren, I do not want you to be ignorant, unaware that all of our fathers were under the cloud, all passed through the sea, all were baptized into Moses, in the cloud and in the sea. They all ate of the spiritual food. They all drank from the same spiritual drink, for they drank that spiritual rock that followed them, and that rock was Christ. But with most of them, God was not well pleased, for their bodies were scattered in the wilderness. Now these things became our examples, to the intent that we should not lust after these evil things as they also lusted. And do not become idolaters as some of them were. As if it was written, the people sat down to eat and to drink, and rose up to play. Nor let us commit sexual immorality, as some of them did, and in one day 23,000 of them fell. Let us not tempt Christ, as some of them also tempted, and were destroyed by serpents. He's talking about Numbers chapter 20. Nor complain, as some of them complained. He's talking about Numbers chapter 12. And when some of them complained, and they were destroyed by the destroyer, he set serpents, and it bit them, and they died. Now, all these things that happened to them, as examples, they were written for our admonition upon whom the age, whom all the ages have come. The word, brother, now, here's the point. All of that I just told you is to get to this point. The word, brother, lest there be in any of you an evil heart of unbelief in departing from the living God. But exhort one another daily, while it is called today, lest any of you be hardened through the deceitfulness of sin, for we become partakers of Christ, if we hold the beginning of our confidence steadfast to the end. While it is said today, if we will hear his voice, do not harden your hearts as they did in the rebellion. For who having heard rebelled? Indeed, was it not all those who came out of Egypt, led by Moses, not with whom he was angry with for 40 years? Was it not with those who sinned, whose corpses fell in the wilderness, and to whom he did not swear that they would not enter into his rest, but those who did not obey, so we see that they could not enter because of unbelief. Now I want to go back in the last few moments tonight. What does all that mean to us? We're on our way to spiritual Canaan. And we have obstacles, and we have adversity, and we have difficulties just like they had. And we have things that can discourage us. We have things that can disillusion us. We can have things that just overwhelm us and wear us down. All those things can happen to us too. What do we do when those things happen? Are we going to follow the pattern that we just read about? Are we going to forget about what we committed ourselves to? Are we going to forget who we belong to? Are we going to forget what God can do? Are we going to forget about his promises? Are we going to forget about this relationship that we willfully and we took on ourselves when we decided to obey the gospel? Are we going to throw all that to the wind? And are we going to forget when the way gets tough? After 40 years, a remnant of Israel entered the land under the leadership of Joshua in Joshua chapter 6. But there remains a rest for the people of God. Now, why is it similar to us? Why does this example, why is it similar to our situation? Because Satan is determined to destroy every person he can destroy. The enemy said, I will pursue, I will overtake, I will divide the spoil, my desire shall be satisfied on them, I will draw out my sword, my hand shall destroy them. That's what Pharaoh said. That's what he was going to do. Satan wants to steal, he wants to kill, he wants to destroy. That's what the book of John tells us in John chapter 10. Satan is the father of the lie. He's the great deceiver. He wants to keep us ignorant. He wants to keep us blind. He wants to lead us to destruction. And he is going to do everything in his power to make it happen. And while you sojourn on this earth, and while you live on this earth, and while you're part of this thing called the universe that God created, and all the ugliness and all the ungodliness and all the things that take place in this world, you and I have been called to lead a distinct, different life with a different focus, a different aim, and we are to never forget who we are and who we serve. No matter what the obstacle, no matter what the snare, no matter what the difficulty is, we are never ever to forget what we committed ourselves to, what we promised to do, and who we serve, and who we belong to. And Satan's going to try to get you to forget every one of those things. And the enemy is far more powerful than us. Never underestimate Satan. He's more powerful than you are, and if you try to fight him by yourself, you're going to lose. If you try to play the devil's game by the devil's rules in the devil's backyard, you are going to get beat every time. God knew you couldn't defeat Satan alone. That's why he gave you spiritual armor in Ephesians chapter 6, 10 through 18. That's why he told you about the devil. He said in 1 Peter 5, verse 8, he is like a roaring lion seeking whom he can devour. He warns you. He gives us instructions how to defeat him, what his purpose is, what his aim is, how he's going to work. He gives us all the information we need to beat him. But if you don't listen, if you don't obey, if you don't believe, you're going to fall just like they did in the wilderness. Satan, you read, Jesus is the way, the truth, and the life. God has given us what we need to pull down every stronghold and every argument that raises its head against him, according to 2 Corinthians 10 and verse 4. We must set our course to walk in the truth. We must walk in the truth. We must formulate our lives to follow in the pattern that God left for us to walk. Because the present is more real to us than God's future promises. Now, what do I mean by that? You've never been to heaven? You've never seen heaven. You never saw the Red Sea. You never saw Jesus hanging on the cross. You never saw him speak the world into existence. There's so many things that we did not personally see. We're not eyewitnesses to. We were not there. But we know they happened. We know that it took place because we trust God and we believe God and we believe his word. But because the present is more real, we live here. We don't live there. We didn't see that. We have to deal with the here and now. And the here and now confuses us, clouds our vision, clouds our focus. And what it causes us to do is forget that we belong to the Lord. That no one is greater than God. That nothing can defeat us as long as we are with God. Nothing can overtake us. Nothing can destroy the hope that we have in Christ Jesus. Nothing. Nothing this world can do anything about that. If. And see, that's what the problem is. That's where the big problem is, the word if. If we believe. If we trust. If we obey. Then it will all be well. But if we don't, what happened to Israel is going to happen to us. It's just that simple. God is telling us the recipe of how not to fall into the disaster that happened to Israel if we take a different course, if we take a different tack, if we go in a different way, then we won't fall like they did. Remember, they said it would have been better if we went back to Egypt. Real faith sustains hope. In closing tonight, I want you to realize that God never said that it's going to be easy. God never said there would not be adversity. God never said that there would not be tribulation. And God never said that the devil is not going to try to discourage you, to disillusion you, to try to defeat you, because he's going to do it at every opportunity he can. But you remember two things. 2 Corinthians 2:11 makes this statement. We need not to be ignorant of Satan's devices, lest he gains an advantage over us. Do you ever wonder why God doesn't spend very much time in his word telling us where Satan came from? We don't really know a lot about the origin of Satan. We don't know where he came from. We know he wasn't created by God. We know that God doesn't create evil. We know that God doesn't tempt me to do evil. But we don't really have a lot of information about that. But you know what God did tell us? He told us how the devil works. He told us what his tactics are. He tells us what his aim is. He tells us what his purpose is. And he tells you how to defeat him where he can meet. Why did he do that? Because he wants us to win. He wants us to defeat him. But you know what? If we're like Israel, and we forget, and we're not careful, and we lose focus, and we forget that God is with us. If we forget, God will never forsake us. That God will never leave us. That nothing this world can do can destroy the love that God has for us. Read at Romans chapter 8. You know, in Romans chapter 8, beginning with verse 34, it asks this question. What can separate a man from the love of Christ? Nothing. Read Romans 8, 35-39. There's not anything this world can do that can separate you from the love of Christ. Who can defeat God? Nobody. Who can defeat us if we remain faithful and committed and dedicated to God and his way? Nobody. No matter what goes around in this world, no matter how evil it gets, no matter how ungodly they may become, no matter how immoral this nation could become, it cannot affect us unless we put our blinders on, unless we put our armor down, unless we try to fight this battle without God. And if we do that, we're going to lose, just like Israel did. And you know why God put this story in the Bible? You know why salvation is so hard, ladies and gentlemen? Because we make it that way. We make it that way because we have to do it the hard way. How many times have you told your kids about things that, to try to help them, that they not make the same mistake you did? Have you ever told your kids, why do you have to learn the hard way? Why don't you just listen and not have to do it the hard way? But you know, sometimes we say to ourselves, you know, I guess we're just going to have to learn the hard way. But you know what? As God's people, we don't need to do that. We don't have to learn the hard way. Because God gave us the blueprint on what happens when you try it the hard way. It doesn't work. It's going to discourage you. It's going to defeat you. It's going to rob you of everything that God has given you and hopes to give you. And so there's a better way. There's a better way. And that's to trust God. Walk with Him. Follow His instruction. Keep His covenant. And believe in Him. Have faith in Him. And yes, you're going to have obstacles. I'm going to have obstacles. You're going to have snares. I'm going to have snares. But through it all, when we close our eyes, lose in death someday, and we will. And one day our journey on this earth will come to an end. And when we take our last breath, and when we draw our last breath in this rock, when we open our proverbial eyes on the other side of eternity, everything that we experience here will mean nothing. If we kept focus on what was really important, wouldn't it be a shame and wouldn't it be a tragedy to have all this information that we can study and read in the Old Testament that prepares us to not make the same mistakes that they did, and wouldn't it be a shame that we turn around and repeat history and we lose our salvation and our time because we did the same thing they did? Because we forgot about God, we forgot about His promises, and we forgot about who we are and who we serve. Salvation is hard because people don't trust God. When you don't trust God, you make the way hard. Let God help you. Do it His way, and it will all work out in the end. We either believe that, or we don't. Please take your song books and turn to Psalm. A brother, Bill, is right there with a song of encouragement. If you're here, you need to make some things right with God. Is anybody here tonight? As a Christian, if you need to make things right, you need to make some correction, and you need encouragement, we're here to help you. The Bible says that we are to pray and we are to encourage one another. And if we can help you in any way tonight, we bid you to come forward as together we stand and as we sing.